The gaming industry, not only in the US, but across the globe, has been a multi-trillion dollar industry for years now. But in the time since the pandemic, gaming has become more than a pastime. It's a vital connection and community for millions. The size and scope of the gaming world has also brought a whole host of issues. Labor, economic, cultural, and political challenges have rocked the gaming industry in recent years, as well as the cultural influence that games and gamers now have over music and film, for instance. In light of all that, we're introducing a new weekly segment here on Culture Shift to cover the many facets of the gaming world. And for that, we're turning to longtime gaming journalist Nate Bender. He's also an audio engineer at WDET, but his major role is as the host of the podcast Let's Play, a daily gaming news podcast. And he's the creator of Checkpoint Radio, the first syndicated radio show for esports. Nate, welcome to Culture Shift.
Thank you so much. I am so excited to be here.
I'm excited that you're here because I want to learn so much about the gaming industry. So,
well, I have more than enough to share with you guys. Don't worry.
We've been talking about this segment for a few months now because, again, there is so much that is happening. And the cultural influence of gamers and gaming is immense. Mm-hmm. So first off, let's break down at the beginning of this conversation, why do video games and the gaming industry matter so much right now? And even me as not a gamer, why should I care?
Well, games are big business. And when I say big business, I mean really, really big business. We're talking just in the U.S. in May 2022 alone, $3.68 billion spent in the gaming sector. And that's down 19% from April. If you compare that up against something like, you know, the U.S. film industry, which in 2021 brought in $36 billion, it seems like there's still room to grow. But then again, when you consider that globally, 2021, video games brought in $180 billion worth of revenue, this is major, major business. And it affects a lot of people's lives. A lot of creative individuals pour their life into making these games that we all love so much. And, you know, it ends up impacting a lot of different people, their livelihoods, and just culture in general.
Mm-hmm. We talk a lot about Silicon Valley and the tech industry, and everyone, you know, knows how important that is to that area of California. But when we're talking about the gaming industry, there's also communities and cities here in the U.S. where the gaming industry is a major employer.
Absolutely.
Austin, Texas, for one.
Yes, Austin, Texas. Seattle, Washington is another. Of course, Silicon Valley. But there's also places in Montreal and all throughout Vancouver. These, they're major, major economic drivers in all of these cities. And, you know, when we're talking about economics and when we're talking about culture, video games have a lot more movement around it than most people are talking about.
Mm-hmm. You know, mentioned that Austin, Texas being a major employer for the video game industry, but is there any idea of roughly how many folks in the U.S. are employed in the industry in some capacity, and how many people, I guess globally even, how big has the industry grown as far as gamers themselves?
That's a great question. I don't have the number off the top of my head, but it's somewhere in the millions. There are tons and tons of people who make their livelihood out of video games. And, recently we've seen a lot of workers related issues that stem from the video game industry.
Okay, and the video games, as we mentioned, are not only is the gaming industry is not self-contained per se. It's influencing culture. It's influencing film and music. Yesterday we had Emmy nominations, and even though there weren't any video game shows in those nominations, those kind of adaptations are becoming more and more prevalent on streaming services like Netflix.
Absolutely,
The Witcher would be one show that made the transition from video game to an incredibly popular a show on Netflix. Do you see that trend continuing?
Absolutely. Just like comic books were the fodder for an entire generation of entertainment, video games, I see, are positioned to be the next sort of video game, the next comic book sort of like sector that's going to explode in terms of entertainment. And we've seen some incredibly successful adaptations. You had mentioned The Witcher, which is a dynamite show, but we've also seen things like Arcane, which is Netflix's animated series that follows characters in the League of Legends games. And these types of shows are making incredible inroads, not just with gamers themselves, but introducing an entirely new generation to games and game characters through these types of adaptations. And we've seen so many more. If you're a fan of animation, the Cuphead show on Netflix, it's like a Max Fleischer animated cartoon. It's beautiful, it's gorgeous, and the game, when you play it, looks exactly like the television show. It's really remarkable. And it's not just TV shows either. There's a lot of movies that have been coming out that are based off of video game properties. We've seen, of course, Uncharted with Tom Holland did amazingly well. We've also seen the Sonic the Hedgehog movie and the sequel. There are just some amazing films that are coming out of the video game space, and even more that are on the forefront. The Fallout television show. We've also got the untitled Mario movie that's going to be coming out. The Borderlands movie. There's some really, really incredible intellectual properties that are going to be turned into television shows and movies.
And, you know, it's so interesting because you just said Sonic and Sonic 2. I watched those movies. I have no shame in that. I think they're great, great examples of an adaptation from a video game to a movie, and it's done beautifully well. So I think you're hitting the nail right on the head with the hammer with this one. However, when we talk about the transition from gaming to movies and to different forms of media, when and how did we see this starting to happen? I remember one of the earliest ones for myself was the Mario movie back in, what was it, the 80s?
It was 1993. And that was the very first.
Trust the fungus.
And
yes,
that movie was so legendarily awful that it put Nintendo off of making movie adaptations until 2019's Detective Pikachu.
Wow.
And the fact that Nintendo is actually stepping back into the movie space is really remarkable, considering how poorly that movie, you know, it's kind of a cult classic these days. But, you know, when it came out, it was an embarrassment for everyone involved.
Hey, when you're six, it's a great movie.
It was great. It's great when we were younger. Same thing with the Street Fighter adaptation. You know, not one of the most popular ones, but it was definitely there growing up.
Absolutely. And, you know, you've also got Double Dragon in there that starred a young Jessica Alba. I mean, some great video game adaptations that didn't quite hit the mark. But if you guys remember, comic book movies were very similar. The first round of comic book movies really sort of missed the mark. I think of Daredevil and Elektra and that sort of era of Marvel movies. And I really think that as filmmakers who appreciate and grew up with movies start to make more movies and get more opportunities, that we're going to start to see a natural marriage of these incredibly intricate storylines that you get with video games and movies.
I think what's interesting, another aspect is like there is now a crossover generational aspect to the gaming industry. Folks who grew up playing the original Nintendo and, Sega Genesis and all that now have kids, sometimes maybe even grandkids now. Yeah. And there's so these multi-generational, sort of fans of gaming industry.
Absolutely. Right. And you know, the pandemic sort of gave us an opportunity to reconnect with that, right? You know, we were spending a lot more time at home. We weren't as busy. And I think it allowed some older folks, maybe in Generation X, to sort of take that Nintendo off the shelf, dust it off, and remember what was so great about playing video games. And, you know, it really has to be said that video games are where young people sort of live, right?
Yeah.
It's It's what they engage with on a more regular basis than other forms of passive media. And in fact, when they do engage with passive media, a lot of them are going to websites like Twitch, mm-hmm. where people on there will stream their live gameplay for sometimes tens of thousands of people to watch in real time. And the viewership statistic for something like Twitch is really remarkable, because in May 2022, there was 1.8 billion hours watched of Twitch. And, you know, Facebook Gaming is pretty close behind with 350 million, but that 1.8 billion hours watched is really remarkable when you start to consider who exactly is on the website. And it's mostly Gen X and millennials. Yeah. There's a steep drop off when you start looking at Gen X and baby boomers who are on the website. So just two generations of viewers are making up almost the same amount of hours watched for a platform like Netflix as they are on a single platform like Twitch. It's really remarkable.
That's incredible. I'm kind of curious. So as you, obviously a longtime gamer yourself, by the way, we're talking to our WDET audio engineer and a longtime gaming journalist, Nate Bender, here on Culture Shift, introducing a new weekly segment covering the gaming industry in so many different facets. We're going to get into politics, labor, economics, as we already have, and more in these segments in the future. But going back to Twitch, for people that don't quite understand the appeal of watching someone else play a video game on their screen, take us into that community and why it's so big and why people are so passionate about it.
I think it's really an opportunity to build community. It's watching someone doing something that they would normally be doing anyway. And, you know, various people on the platform take various approaches to how they deliver their content. There are some people who are incredibly skilled gamers, and so when you go to their channel, you're getting high-level gameplay. There are other people who aren't really very good at video games. I'm one of them. I love them, not very good at them. And those folks tend to be more entertaining and go for a much more interactive process. And, you know, now Twitch has kind of started to evolve beyond just the boundaries of watching other people play video games. Original content creators have started to come onto the platform, and now you start to see things like political streamers taking off, like Hasanabe or Central Committee, that are dedicated to watching the news, and you're sort of watching and reading the news along with them. And it's become a platform that has grown out of one idea that I'm 37. Watching somebody else play video games for a long period of time doesn't necessarily appeal to me. I understand that it's a thing, but I don't know that I could exactly translate why it's that appealing. But as a platform, it has certainly grown into something that it really didn't start anywhere close to.
And you know, Nate, I don't know if it's generational, like you've been saying, but for me, I'm 30. I just turned 30. I watch people play games.
Sure.
I watch a lot of those little clips. I watch them from various levels. Maybe they're really good, like you said, and I watch the high level competitions as well. I watch the low level ones as well. And it's just something about it. I don't have words for it either to really explain it, but you just kind of get into it with that person, and it kind of feels like you're in this little space in the community with the people who are watching it with you. It feels really, really, I guess you can say, comforting to be with like-minded people watching the same thing.
Absolutely. And I think if you grew up with older siblings too,
I did,
then that it makes sense watching other people play video games. You may have grown up doing that.
Yeah. I was the only girl. I wasn't allowed to touch the video games.
I didn't touch them either. I watched. Yep. We just watched. Yep.
We're talking about Twitch. We're talking about these new mediums and their influences. But there's also a very old institution that is now being affected by the gaming industry and the popularity of it. And that's the Grammys. The Grammys
Absolutely.
Now have a category for video game soundtracks.
Yes. On June 9th, the Grammys announced that the best score soundtrack for video games and other interactive media, which recognizes excellence in scores for video games, it has been introduced. And this was really because video games kept sneaking into the Grammys. And it may surprise people, but the first one to actually be nominated and win all the way back in 2011 was from Civilization 4 called Baba Yetu.
Absolutely wow. Beautiful.
So this was performed by the Soweto Gospel Choir. So they may sound a little bit familiar to you if you're fans of, Disney movies and stuff like that. But an absolutely gorgeous composition, which won for Best Original Arrangement and Accompanying Vocalist, composed by Christopher Tin.
Oh, wow.
So there was another nomination in 2013 for the game Journey, which was nominated for Best Score Soundtrack for Visual Media, which was composed by Austin Wintory, which you can hear behind us right now, and an absolutely gorgeous ambient soundtrack that brought together an experience that I really have trouble putting words to. Journey is literally, as its title says, a journey. It's one of those that has to be, I think, experienced by each individual person. But Journey getting nominated in 2013 for their absolutely amazing, amazing soundtrack.
Let's listen to it a little bit here.
It is. It's epic.
It is. And it really brings the emotion that you feel while playing Journey together in this very palpable way. I love that soundtrack.
I would point to the increased popularity of gaming, not only just because there is the internet, you can, have these communities online and more, but because video games themselves have become so emotional. They become a real, a deep narrative in a lot of games.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The narrative aspect to video games is one of those things that, people really gravitate to. When they say what their favorite part of playing a video game is, a lot of times it's the narrative. It's the story that comes along with it. And that's, I think, really important. Also, when we, go back to talking about things like movies and TV shows and adaptations that would be happening from the video game world itself. So there you go. That's 2013's winner. Or I'm sorry, not winner, nominee. And then this year, in 2020, we had a really, really amazing thing happen. There's been this phenomenon on the internet for years of people playing covers of video game songs. And one of them won a Grammy this year for original arrangement, and it's for Meta Knight's Revenge. So this is what the original sounded like back in 1996. And here's the version by the 8-Bit Big Band.
Hold on, we gotta load that up, Nate. 1 second.
No, that was it.
That was it. That was it. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Amazing, amazing original, not original, but original cover and winning for best arrangement this year. And I think, that is another reason why the Grammys look at video games as a completely legitimate art form in their eyes.
I mean, it's created a new career path for people.
Absolutely.
Now they can go into the industry of creating soundtracks and music for games.
And there are people who have made their entire career built around that. Lena Raine is one of them. It's an incredibly fulfilling creative endeavor. So that's what's going on with the Grammys and video games. But I also did want to bring you guys a couple of trailers to show you because, I think when people hear video games, they tend to think a couple of things. They tend to think guns and violence and conflict. And, you know, games can be, as you mentioned, Amanda, so much more than that. So there's a couple of trailers for games that are coming out really soon that I wanted to share with you guys, starting with this one, Stray.
All right, you showed us this trailer this morning, and I am in love with this game.
Same.
You are a cat.
You're a cat.
You're a cat, and you're on a mission.
You're a cat, and you are in a world of robots, and, you know, yeah, you have a mission. And, you know, again, I think people tend to put video games into a one categorical box, and that's the only way that they can possibly think of it. And I think a game where you take control of a cat and explore the world around you, it just completely dashes the notion that video games are one thing and one thing only. So this game is from Blue 12, which is ex-Ubisoft developers and being published by Annapurna, which published The Unfinished Swan and 12 Minutes, an amazing publisher of indie games. And it's an open world third person adventure where you control a cat. What
it
more
looks
do you
amazing.
Need?
What
it more
looks
do you
amazing.
Need?
But for folks that don't know, what does open world mean?
So open world means that, you know, you can go anywhere. The choice is up to the player where you go next. There's no level one, level two, level three. You're dropped into a world and you can go left. You can go right. You can go up. You can go down. You can go anywhere you want to go.
Awesome. Okay. So before we wrap up, you got another game that is soon to be released that you want to talk about. And this one is also incredible. I mean, the visuals on both these games, absolutely incredible. And I love the different take on it. These aren't war games.
Yes, no. Absolutely. So this one is called Season, A Letter to the Future.
She set out to record life at the end of this season, to make it real for people in the future. She asked us about living together.
And we asked her about traveling alone.
Okay, this game is so cool. Set it up for us.
So this is another open world game where you're approaching a cataclysm that's called the season. And you are tasked with recording memories. So your weapons, or really your tools in this game, are a camera and an audio recorder. And so you're going around capturing audio, talking to people, interviewing people, and writing down memories in your scrapbook. Mm. And when I saw the trailer for the first time, I went, wow, this seems really, really familiar. It seems an awful lot like what we do here at WDET.
Yeah, you just described my job for the last
exactly
12
exactly
years.
Exactly. So, you know, again, when it comes to the way that we tend to think about games, mm-hmm. most people think violence, guns, big muscle dudes, and you know, it's not often that you're approached with an idea from a video game that says, "Hey, why don't you explore this gorgeous world, this handcrafted world, and take some pictures and record some sound and get to know some people?" It's a really, really unique opportunity, even inside of a video game. And I just wanted to be able to share that with you guys.
And when's that coming out again?
That is slated for autumn 2022. So hopefully fall this year, we'll see some more.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Nate. Nate Bender is an audio engineer here at WDET. He's also the host of the Daily Gaming, a podcast called Let's Play, a longtime gaming journalist. And we'll be discussing so many more facets of the gaming industry every Thursday here on Culture Shift. Nate, thank you so much.
Thank you.